With the world's focus on wars in Gaza and Ukraine, the threat of domestic terrorism from right-wing extremists and Islamist jihadists has temporarily faded from the headlines. Well, it had until last month when ISIS claimed responsibility for a coordinated attack on a Moscow theatre which left more than 140 people dead. And this week, the Islamic State affiliate, ISIS-K, launched social media threats urging its followers to attack matches in the Champions League football at venues in Madrid, London and Paris. And France, which is now on high terror alert, is doing everything it can to bolster security ahead of the Paris Olympics in the middle of the year, requesting help from 40 other nations. I'm joined now by two of the world's leading terror experts. Michael Smith is a specialist at open source intelligence, joining us from South Carolina. And Michael Pregent is a former US intelligence officer and former advisor to US General David Petraeus in Iraq back in 2007 when Al-Qaeda was the major terrorist threat. He joins us from Washington, D.C. Michael and Michael, welcome to Today Extra.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is Michael in D.C.
Thank you, Fran. Glad to be with you all. Good morning, Australia. It's Mike Smith calling or receiving the call from South Carolina.
All right, Mike. I'll call you Mike Smith. Mike Smith, I think many of us thought ISIS had been, if not defeated, then definitely depleted with the collapse of the caliphate from Raqqa to Mosul. Is ISIS making a comeback or did it never actually go away?
It really never went away. The big setback for it was that it lost control of the epicenter of its territorial claims. Meanwhile, since then, the group has been, you know, very aggressively expanding its operational footprint far beyond its areas of operation back in 2016, including in places like Mozambique. And this really has been an ongoing issue. It's not a suddenly emergent issue. It's just one that I think, as you mentioned, a lot of the attention to that set of problems was sort of eclipsed by developments in Ukraine and other issues. Of course, the global pandemic depleted a lot of interest in the ISIS problem. But I think the larger picture here is that just like Al-Qaeda, ISIS poses a very durable, resilient threat, particularly against Western interests. And so I think that, you know, as you were talking in the prior segment about the importance of journalistic focus on serious issues that can affect, you know, global security, such as money laundering, as brought to light by your prior guest. This is a set of problems that I would call on journalists to try to re-engage with more aggressively because these problems are not going away anytime soon.
Michael Pregent, back in after 2014 and 15, when ISIS controlled big swathes of territory in Iraq and Syria and were operating really at will and in the most horrifying fashion, then it lost its so-called caliphate. The international coalition working to defeat it in Iraq and Syria claimed success. Did we take our eye off the ball or perhaps misunderstand the nature of ISIS?
Well, thanks for having me. The nature of ISIS is it built a brand that anyone could join, right? A lone wolf. We've heard the term lone wolf. And what does that mean? It means someone somewhere takes advantage of a vulnerable group of civilians out on the town or just enjoying their lives and conducts an attack and then says it's in the name of ISIS. So ISIS built this brand that anyone can join by conducting a violent act. And I think that's where we are now.
One of the affiliates of ISIS is ISIS-K. ISIS-K took responsibility for the attack in Moscow last month. Well, I can ask either of you, but Mike Smith, what is ISIS-K? How is it different from ISIS?
There's really no difference, and this is all just sort of a bizarre exercise in academic study. Really, ISIS, just like Al-Qaeda, is an organization with branches that are located they're dispersed throughout many areas of what these groups would claim are historically Muslim lands. And really, the agendas in both cases are very clearly defined by central leadership figures. And the various branches that are dispersed in places like Afghanistan or West Africa or Southern Africa or elsewhere in the world, you know, those organizations tend to try to operate in a manner that is consistent with a larger set of agendas, but meanwhile take into consideration localized issues that can help the group in various ways, either instill fear on local populations or endear the groups to various segments of those populations that might be willing to support each branch. So I think that really what's important to understand is, whereas Michael is talking about the sort of power of persuasion is what he's getting at with ISIS, is that the continued operability of these branches, far from just the Middle East or even just Afghanistan, all of that factors into the perceptibility of ISIS being a strong, durable, credible threat. And that, in turn, is very important in terms of helping the group or enabling the group to persuade people here in the West to go out and perpetrate attacks to demonstrate their support for the group. And I think what's also important to consider is that recently ISIS's spokesman touted the importance of doing things like keeping up the circulation of years-old propaganda that calls for attacks targeting things like sports events. And really what the group did was it took Anwar al-Awlaki's online radicalization and recruitment program to new heights, which is something that I brought to light in a Senate hearing back in 2017. This is really nothing new. It's just that ISIS has achieved a power of persuasion that's far greater than al-Qaeda when it comes to appealing for attacks in the West.
Yeah, and it has done that ever since it began, really, with its, video presentations. It's quite sophisticated publishing, if you like. And as you mentioned, the latest thing we've seen is these threats against major football matches in Europe. So far, the UEFA Champions League games are played on safely. But Michael Pregent, the latest message from propaganda message from ISIS is images of a drone with above these football stadiums with a tagline, if they constrict and oppress you on the ground, then strike them from the sky. So aimed at those sort of lone wolf operators that Mike was talking about. It's a more high-tech way of operating than, say, al-Qaeda was during the years when you were in Iraq, not driven from caves in Afghanistan. As someone who was there on the front line, if you like, of that war on terror, what do you think when you see a group like ISIS resurge now, as it appears to be doing? Are you surprised, particularly given that, foreign troops aren't in Iraq, aren't in Afghanistan? Are you surprised to see this again?
I'm not. I'm actually surprised that we haven't had an attack in the last couple of years, especially with the level of comfort that we have here in the United States, despite this open border. We had the FBI basically said that there was a 22-year-old Hispanic male that pledged loyalty to ISIS and was going to conduct an attack against churches. They've been following this guy since he was 18 years old. So the FBI focused manpower and confidential sources to target this one individual when actual cells are in the United States, actual ISIS cells, al-Qaeda cells, Hezbollah cells, and Hamas copycat cells. So there is a bigger threat. And what I'd like to say to your audience is that these attacks aren't necessarily sophisticated. They're not expensive. They basically just take advantage of a vulnerable population that isn't paying attention. With regards to drone strikes on stadiums, that is the one thing that we do well here in the U.S. The Super Bowl was the most highly secured event this year. And the biggest threat that they were looking for were drones. And prior to the Super Bowl, there was a drone that flew over, I believe it was the Baltimore Ravens football game here in the United States. And it shut down the game for about 15 minutes. So that capability is real. So I've been taught to think like the enemy for 30 years. So if I was one of these lone wolves and I was being told by ISIS how to conduct an attack, I'm going to look for a lesser protected venue to conduct a simple crude drone attack, drop something over a stadium. It doesn't have to be a sophisticated explosive. It just has to cause panic. It could be a powder that basically panics the host stadium. And that's the kind of attacks we should be expecting to see. This attack in Russia was not expensive. The attack on October 7th was not expensive in Israel. It was basically motivated individuals with AK-47s taking on a vulnerable population that was either celebrating at a concert venue or out on the night at a theater like the attack in Moscow.
Well, on that basis, then, the Olympics, the Paris Olympics coming up in July, they are an unlikely target because a very high-profile gathering, which, you know, you'd think might be an attractive target for a group like ISIS, but will be very highly protected.
I do believe that.
I would say that the level of protection, there's an assumption here that you can achieve a power of deterrence. And I don't think that there's much evidence of a capability to achieve the level of deterrence that is sort of implicit in the comment that you've made, Fran, when it comes to either Al-Qaeda or ISIS enthusiasts. In the case of ISIS enthusiasts who would be interested in going out and perpetrating an attack, even a failed attack is good enough to pass muster in the eyes of the leadership of ISIS. It's the effort that matters. And frankly, in the cases where a would-be or aspirant terrorist is killed in the process of attempting to do something, they tout that as a form of so-called martyrdom, which they laud and they extol, and they treat these people as exemplars who are creating a model of behavior that others should attempt to emulate. So the greater the security posture at an event, again, I don't think that that creates an effective deterrence. If anything, it can also just serve to further induce an interest in trying to strike at those events, because there's a greater likelihood of the perpetrator achieving that ultimate outcome of so-called martyrdom. Meanwhile, back to your comments, or questions rather, about the use of drones. Again, that's something that in terms of behavioral modeling and setting expectations for others to attempt to do the same thing, that goes back years. I mean, for years prior to the fall of the so-called caliphate and Iraq and Syria, ISIS was rigorously documenting in its propaganda the use of very small drones to drop explosives on enemy forces. So this is something that they have been inculcating an interest in doing within their wider support base around the world for many years.
Okay.
But again, I think that Michael, his comments about, you know, the ease of attack being important, I think that really what's important to consider is that ISIS has also been very effective in encouraging its supporters to do much more basic things that can achieve great impact in terms of the spectacle of the event.
Okay.
Using just even basic knives or rental trucks and the like to go out and perpetrate mass casualty attacks.
Yeah, as we've seen before. Look, we're going to run out of time here. There's so much to discuss. But Michael Pregent, the Moscow attacks and these online threats we've been talking about come against the backdrop of the war in Gaza. Is that war presenting an opportunity to radicalize, or is it indeed radicalizing a new generation of recruits for ISIS in the same way the wars in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, you know, gave us the rise of Al-Qaeda and ISIS Mark I?
Absolutely. So again, I've been taught to think like the enemy for 30 years. And if I was a terrorist leader in the United States, I'd be watching all of these pro-Hamas protests and identifying the talent in those protests. Those military-aged males that are 1 degree away from violence, those are would be the people I'd be recruiting. So my answer would be absolutely. There's an opportunity for terrorist leaders to recruit the talent in quotations that have shown themselves in these violent protests here in the United States and abroad.
And Mark Smith, a final comment from you. Is that what you're seeing in the open source material you're analyzing every day? Has the tone and tempo changed as the war in Gaza goes on?
What I would say is that the war in Gaza is a situation that really fits within ISIS's grand framework of demonstrating competency and dedication to a global jihadist cause. And if ISIS can stimulate an interest in perpetrating more attacks right now, particularly in countries in the West that appear to be supportive of what's going on, it doesn't matter to the extent which our governments are, but if they can just appear or create the veneer of that perceptibility that we are supporting Israel in various ways that are outrageous across the Muslim world, and meanwhile use that as an instrument to encourage people to go out and perpetrate attacks, what this ultimately does is create a circumstantial situation here where ISIS can appear more credible and competent than Al-Qaeda. And what's important to keep in mind is that there has been this ongoing competition for dominance in a wider global jihadist movement between Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And so I think that that's really where the form of analysis in my mind is important to consider, more so than the potential of ISIS enthusiasts or members in the West going out and trying to recruit people from Hamas supportive audiences. Because I think that oftentimes it's, you know, it's going to be very difficult to peel away support from Hamas into ISIS, particularly in the West.
All right.
If you've got people who are enthusiastic about Hamas in the West, they're probably looking at ISIS already as an organization that is just not something they find appealing. But meanwhile, I do think the larger competitive environment demonstrating greater competency than al-Qaeda right now is something that is factoring into the push for attacks in the West. And ISIS's spokesman just recently continued to frame the conversation around Western governments, particularly those that are leadership figures in the global coalition against ISIS, as priority attacks, or targets for attacks, rather.
As I say, we could talk about this for hours.
I know you got to go, but al-Qaeda is way more effective than ISIS is. They're strategic, they're quiet, and if there is a high-profile attack, it will likely be an al-Qaeda attack, not an ISIS one.
Now we're talking about brand recognition between terrorist groups. It's frightening. Mike Smith, Michael Pregin, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Fran.
Thank you.
Michael Smith is a specialist at open source intelligence, and Michael Pregent is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute in Washington.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.